You're listening to The Kylo Show, the podcast where we talk about how to keep your love on no matter what and why whole healthy families are going to save the world. And it starts right now.
Hello, and welcome to The Kylo Show. You and I are back at it together again.
I know.
I've been missing.
A while since I saw you.
It does start to feel like that. I feel like I get a little vacation, but you had a little vacation too because Mom and I took over for a minute.
Yeah, I think I was out of town, so.
So it didn't feel like vacation.
It kind of happened, and I didn't realize I was vacationing.
Yeah. I may have been out of town a little bit too because it's been a busy season around here.
It is.
But it's fun. So today's episode, though, is just going to be not really a theme.
It's like question goulash.
It is. It's just a hodgepodge of all the questions that you've been asking and you've sent in, which we love. You should keep doing that. You do that through social media. Instagram is the best place to do that. And say, here's a question for the podcast. Let's do that because we like your questions and we're going to answer them.
When I was little, my mom would make goulash. And it was like noodles, hamburger, sour cream, and tomato soup or something.
Yeah. I've never had that in my life.
I know. Well, you know, this was, you know.
I know.
Little tacos with ketchup on them. And
is that what goulash is? If I were to look it up, like that's
I don't
recipe?
Think so.
Oh.
No, I don't know. I think it's Hungarian. There's some sort of a Hungarian dish called goulash. Oh. I think that's actually a word, a Hungarian word. I should ask Lewis.
You should ask
him. I should ask him.
Because I don't think it's noodles, hamburgers, and
but it was this little shell. Those little shell.
Those are like special noodles.
Yeah. Uh-huh. It was a big deal. We loved it, man. We just mowed on that stuff.
There are certain things that show up from your childhood. My kids don't do ketchup on their tacos.
Mm, I know. But I don't either anymore.
Not anymore. But I did love it when we were kids.
Yeah.
I don't fry the tortillas like Mom used to as well.
Yeah.
She would fry those suckers. Well, and they were so greasy.
It came from me probably like... We fried them when I was a kid, so she probably started doing it. I don't know. Maybe that's a generation
thing. I don't know. Well, we don't fry the tortillas anymore, and we don't put ketchup on them. So that's something that didn't transition with one legacy to the next. It stopped. So anyways, but yeah, we're going to have a goulash of questions
Here
for
you.
Here
we go. Yeah.
So what's the first one you want to do?
Does being a leader mean making all the decisions? You know, that's kind of probably coming in from our gender series that we just did. And I guess the question here is, should we fight about who gets to make a decision about this or that? Or should I believe him when he says, I have the man card, I'm throwing it on the table now, and I will be the final decision? I mean, this is a hard practice for people to work out because they disagree. Like, well, what are we going to do? Are we just going to stalemate this whole thing, or what are we going to do? And I think what people fail to learn or they don't really grasp is that we, in our disagreement about what to do next, we just haven't listened well enough yet, you know? And I always like to think of, you know, like this over here, you know, on the left here, this is what I think we should do. And all my needs get met in this over here. And then the other person is saying, well, over here on the right is what I think we should do, and all my needs get met in this decision. And that is usually a heated disagreement, is which one of us is going to win and which one of us is going to lose. And so there's that win-win, like, okay, we need something over here in the middle where we put your needs and we put my needs. And both our needs are going to get met with this new solution that we came up with. Because doing it your way isn't working for me, and doing it my way isn't working for you. So how can we build a solution that meets both of our needs? And that's good leadership. I mean, if you're running a team, you're mm-hmm. really looking for how can I meet as many needs of my team and my departments and my ministries or whatever it is? How can we create a decision that meets as many needs as possible for this team? Mm-hmm. Because then people are bought in and they're like, okay, I feel respected and powerful, and I feel like I'm a part of this team.
See, when I read it, I wasn't thinking the gender roles that we just came off of. I was thinking someone that is a church leadership or part of a team that feels like their voice isn't valuable. But it could go either way. One of the things I was thinking about is the kids, and Ben and I have been watching the show Survivor. Mm-hmm. And the last episode, this guy was talking all about how he came in and he was a leader and, you know, he got sick or something. That's why he left. But he's back on the same show and he's saying how, you know, the person that's the leader, his head's on the chopping block. And so this question made me laugh because his, I guess, identity of what a leader is the person that makes all the decisions mm-hmm. and the one that everyone must obey, which would probably make you dangerous in this game of Survivor. But I think of a leader as someone that is really aware, self-aware, and the goal is how do I help these people be successful? Mm-hmm. So my ability to listen, my ability to lead and make a decision when we're not sure, but asking questions, looking for input, and being brave enough to go first if everyone's afraid to. I think about often here at Loving on Purpose, we've had a couple different times where we're volunteering for things that feel a little bit scary to all of our team. We've been doing some truthing sessions, different things like that. And I know that if I go first, I'm going to help the rest of the team see that it's okay. Mm-hmm. And that's the decision I'm making is how can I ease the anxiety of the people that I love so that we can do this because I know the good that's on the other side of it, even if I'm a little afraid of it. Mm-hmm. But that's, you know, whether it's the man card, or husband role, or someone you're working with, being a leader isn't necessarily about making all the decisions, but really that the goodness of a team.
Yeah, and about creating a place to find the best decision, mm-hmm. not
my decision,
forcing the people who follow you to pick your decision.
Yeah.
Or just suffer through your decision.
Yeah. Well, and then the way in which you lead, because my personality is bold, direct, blunt, versus Ben's personality is he just has a softer edge. I mean, I was watching him during our Kylo University, and he's speaking and leading all these people, and I was just laughing, thinking, Ben just oozes out of him. I love people. Mm-hmm. And you can't talk to him or listen to him talk for very long and not just start to feel that way. Mm-hmm. I don't think that I don't have that. I just don't have it like Ben has it.
Nobody has it like Ben has
right.
it.
Right. Yeah. And so that's just the beauty of being aware of your strength, being aware of what you can bring and how to utilize that best as a leader rather than I'm going to trump and take every card. So, you know, if we're making a decision, I'm probably the one that sounds like I made the decision, but I really just listened to everybody, and I just was confident enough to say, okay, I think we all agree this is what we're doing. Let's go. Mm-hmm. So that's what I think about when I hear that question. So,
all right. You have another one? You have one do you like here?
Yeah, I have one. It says, I've read Keep Your Love On and Imperfect Parenting. Woohoo! Thank you. And have learned a lot from it. I am implementing these tools, but my spouse has not and does not seem to have any intent and does not have any intent to. We have kids, so I feel at odds with the different styles and the way of parenting. This is not really uncommon that one person in the home gets our resources and tools and the other one's not quite on board yet. Sometimes it's just because they're not in enough pain to see a change. They feel like they're doing a decent job. They're happy. Sometimes it's they're not engaged at all. I mean, there's a variety of different reasons why. I think that's the hard part is what I run into the most right here is the person that has learned our stuff is so excited and grateful for it, that then they start to shove it down the throat of the spouse. You need this. And that almost always makes things worse.
Yeah.
Because then the person that's not ready for it is pissed at this and does all that they can to get away from this thing that you are pushing so hard.
They're feeling controlled.
Feel totally controlled. And they don't actually see the value or the beauty of this thing that you've been transformed by.
Mm-hmm.
And so the input that I normally give to a spouse or whoever I'm talking to be patient and really do a really great job of understanding these tools, implementing them in your side of the relationship, your side with the kids. And if it crosses the line where disrespect is now entering your marriage because of the way that your spouse is talking to the kids or treating the kids, that becomes a different game that you play. You know, if they're yelling, disrespectful, all of that's going on, that's when you get to come in and say, like, hey, I don't want anyone to talk to our kids that way. And this now is impacting you and I's relationship, and mm-hmm. that's a bummer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you get to speak to that, but it's you trying to convince them feels like control, can feel like manipulation. So, you know, I can speak for Ben and I. Like, Ben and I, our parenting styles looked very different early on. I was very familiar with this. Ben had a desire to learn, just he didn't dive into it like I did. And it wasn't until he was ready that he really stepped it up a notch and totally changed our family culture because we got on the same page together. And I wouldn't say that he didn't want to, but I think it was just I was so used to it. Mm-hmm. I just did it automatically, and he had to go and learn in a way that I had just kind of, I don't know, been around it for years and years of following you around at schools for Love and Logic stuff.
Totally.
So
I think it's always interesting when people think that they had the same parenting approach before they read Kylo.
That's true.
You know, like, no, you were on different pages. Anyway, you just started feeling convicted or like, oh, this isn't working. I got to do something different. And that's the journey is you engage. It's like, I need to lose 50 pounds. So everybody in the house is going on a diet. Like, whoa. Hey, hold up.
Yeah.
No sugar for anybody in the house. Like, well, guess what everybody's going to do when you're not around.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you know. Yeah. Here, kids, I bought Snickers bars for all of us.
Hide them in your room.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
But when you change, what begins to happen is your relationship with your children changes.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually your spouse will be wondering, wow, the kids are really connected to you. Yeah. And I'm starting to feel the way you felt when you changed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm starting to have that feeling.
Yeah.
I need some help. And there it is. It's waiting. It's available. There's momentum. And you really are a leader. You may not be the teacher, but you're at least the leader in the momentum. So I think that would be the smartest move for you is just pour on the steam and do it really great.
Mm-hmm.
And let the fruit of the adjustments and the connection that you have with your kids, let that be the teacher.
Yeah.
And then, you know, if, like you say, you know, if the other style in your home is causing trouble and you're getting defensive of the children because of the level of the disrespect that your husband or wife is allowing, then that's a conversation between you and them.
Yeah. I think about when I was 16, I got that job becoming a nanny. And, you know, I was 16. I just, these girls were 5 and 6. I just went straight to what I knew and doing all the parenting stuff back then. And I remember him coming to me, the boss, probably, I don't know, 2 months in, and asking me what it was that I was doing because his kids listen to me and they respect me in a way that he does not have at home. And it was a pretty crazy moment, but it's similar in that I wasn't obviously not going to try and force him to do any of this stuff, but I was just showing up as me and creating a relationship and a standard and boundaries with these girls. And that was so impactful that it changed his way of parenting.
Yeah.
And I remember giving him all the stuff, and I remember being in the room when he first started giving choices. He looked at me and goes, "Is that the right way?" I just remember laughing. Like, this 50-year-old man is asking me if that's the right way of parenting your kids. Yep. Good job.
Yep.
You know.
Carry on.
Pretty funny. But yeah, I think it's totally that game of being patient. And it's almost like our you know, we want the world to know that we love Jesus by our relationship with him and how we reflect him in our relationships. And I think this is the same thing. Like, you want to show up in that way for your family, for your kids. You want your spouse to realize that you have influence, you have value, and you have connection in a way that they long for. Mm-hmm. That's the best compliment that your spouse and goes, "What are you doing? Because mm-hmm. what you're doing, I actually want and long for." Mm-hmm. So that's what you got to keep in front of you more than the heartache of that. You can see that they're damaging their relationship. You can see that they're creating distance. That's not yours to actually manage. And it's really hard to not jump in and be like, "You have to do this, do that, don't mm-hmm. do that." You know, mm-hmm. just keep on this place of, my vision is that my kids are, we have such a connected relationship that that's what moves my spouse's heart mm-hmm. for change.
Mm-hmm.
That's the end result. Anyway.
Yeah, and work like crazy on your connection with your spouse.
Absolutely.
You know, just grow that thing to where they actually care about the connection, what affects that connection, and the influence that flows through that connection. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if you're doing a great job connecting with your spouse in these adjustments, mm-hmm. it's just a matter of time before they feel safe enough to say,
yeah.
"Help."
You got another one?
Well, I have kind of a funny one here that seems funny anyway.
Okay.
Why is it expected for a manly man to have a wife that will submit? Now, that's funny to me just because, A, I don't know what manly man is exactly in the context of this question. But I am guessing it's
he's got a beard and tattoos in my head and carries around an axe or something. I'm sorry, when you read that, that's what a manly man
is. A lumberjack.
I
yeah, I got.
I
a
don't
lumber,
know what a manly man's supposed to be.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly.
A super jock. I don't. Maybe he's a manly man. I don't know what a manly man. I'm just gonna keep making up things.
Yeah, yeah. I think that the inference here is that. He maybe is insecure. I don't know. He's like a one-dimensional human. I don't know exactly.
Well, maybe manly man is it like an arrogant man? Or,
well, I mean, the sad part is probably, why is it expected that an aggressive man?
That's what I'm trying to figure out.
I think that's what, maybe, but.
We're guessing.
Maybe if we put godly man there,
mm-hmm.
then, you know, it's probably because it's in the Bible, you know.
Godly man.
That a wife would submit to her godly man.
Yeah.
You know, that's in there. And then right before that, in Ephesians 5, I think mm-hmm. it says, submit to one another, you know. And then it goes on to say, wives, submit to your husbands. But right before that, it says, husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her.
Mm-hmm.
And then it says, wives, submit to your husbands. So maybe if we put if a manly man is like a Christ-like godly man.
Then that sentence makes sense.
I can answer it more clearly. And that is because it really is the message of respect, the message of trust, mm-hmm. the message of connectedness and union when we submit to each other. Sometimes submission is about like what we led with on this one, which is, does the leader get to make all the decisions? Like, well, okay, well, if I'm equating manly man and making all the decisions, then that's a problem, because you feel disempowered, dishonored, disrespected yourself, and it doesn't sound like your needs are being addressed or honored in the decision making. So that's, you know, that's a bad example of a leader in general.
Yeah,
is somebody that just wants to bark out all that and then throw the submit to me card on the table, and like, yeah, you're just doing a bad job with leadership. So you got problems everywhere.
Yeah,
not just in your marriage. But the context of submission is like a couple who knows how to dance really well. You know, there's a leader in a dance. There's not two leaders in the dance. There's a leader and there's a partner. And we're tearing up the floor, and it's fun to watch and it's fun to do, but it's because we have an agreement that we're doing something. You know, we're gonna enjoy each other. We're gonna, you know, you lead, I'll follow. And are you making all the decisions? No, I'm making all my decisions. You're making all your decisions, and we're putting them together. And we've created this really beautiful dance.
If you're ready for a life-changing transformation, head on over to KyloUniversity.com now and start your journey towards a more fulfilling future. Don't miss this incredible opportunity. Your transformation begins at Kylo University. Visit KyloUniversity.com today. I mean, I talk about often the reality of my life not submitted to Ben versus now submitted to Ben. And I wouldn't say I was like, I don't know, maybe I was crazy and just really disrespectful and manipulative and passive aggressive and aggressive earlier years of marriage because I was scared.
I was just going to say, you sounded scared.
I was just scared. I was scared he didn't want to lead. I was scared he didn't know how to lead. I was scared he wasn't ever going to lead. And so my personality is, well, then I will do it. I will do it, and I will remove the thing that feels like an obstacle in my life or go around it or do the Christian wife duty and make you feel like I care about you and you're involved in this, but really I will do it without you. I mean, that's what I did in a lot of ways, is we played this role because we were married and Christians, but we weren't actually submitted to one another. And, you know, I don't think you have to be an intense personality to do this. I think you can do it with any personality. It's just the base starts with, I'm scared. And, you know, I know a lot of people that they've come to us for family coaching, and, you know, he's more an aggressive style personality and she's a more passive, and, you know, she's not really submitted to him because she's still afraid of him. So she creates a life kind of in the house without him, without his involvement. But the things that he cares about, he feels like she's submitted in. But really, she's just afraid of him. So I was afraid of Ben, but in a different way. And so I leaned in, and I would say that Ben was on his journey of discovering what does it mean to be a manly, Christ-like husband. Like, he figured that out in a lot of ways in his own personal life, but then how to come in and be a covering and a safe place and a leader as a husband is a bit of a learning process. And he had to invite other men in to help him figure out this role. And I had to invite other women in of, how do you do this well? And I mean, I had a, my, obviously mom was, she's wired very similar to me. I remember another woman in my life that helped a lot, I think in this season. Her name was Deanna, and she was not as similar to me. And but she was like, I'm like, okay, you're still confident. You're still leading. You're still got all these passions in your life, but you feel like you're you know, submit it to your husband. And I just, that was so much of the change was us figuring out how to be safe around each other, that increased the trust, increased the connection. And then we could actually reveal our hearts to each other. Mm. And that's what changed. And, or, you know, I love to speak, and then I'm very sassy, very blunt, all the fun that you see of me on stage. And, you know, Ben's approach is different than mine when he's speaking. And then I, to tell that whole room, like, I am fully submitted to this man. Like, I trust him. I, you know, I've learned that when I'm scared, my emotion of choice is to get angry, but then to know that that will not produce anything of fruit. So to go back to him and go, I'm actually really afraid. I need to feel really safe right now. Mm-hmm. And then to watch him shine, mm-hmm. you know, like, oh, this is the beauty of what submission looks like in our marriage, mm-hmm. is we just live in this more blissful place because we've matured. Mm-hmm. So a godly man, I think a wife that's submitted to him is actually really, really beautiful. Mm-hmm. And the role of being a submitted wife doesn't feel like a cage. Mm-hmm. It actually, it feels like freedom.
Yeah, and a man really wants to feel like a protector, a provider. Mm-hmm. And a woman really wants to feel protected and taken care of.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of just the design. But both will violate. You know, mm-hmm. both will violate. The woman will grab the masculine and say, I'll take care of myself and yeah. I'll provide for myself. I don't need no man. Like, yeah, and you have a giant hole that is left gaping because you never got over your fear. Mm-hmm. And the man's like, well, I don't have to take care of anybody. Why don't somebody take care of me? Like, and you have a giant hole that will never get filled because you have failed, mm-hmm. you know. And I mean, that is the world, the confuser, the destroyer at work, trying to get women to do men's jobs and men to do women's jobs. And it's super unsatisfying.
Yeah.
And super confusing, and it is at the same time, a young couple gets together and, you know, the man's making mistakes hand over fist, and the woman's like, oh my gosh, are you
what
kidding
did
me?
I do?
Who am I? Are you kidding me? But it is like, you know, in a lot of ways, kind of like a startup business. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, we have a leader here. I don't think this is the smartest thing to do, but okay. So here we go. And that, you know, eventually it does build a great team.
Yeah.
If they can love and respect each other.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
All right. You got the next question?
Yeah. This one kind of has two questions at the end of it. So we'll see if they can go into one. I work in a culture where there isn't much keeping your love on. I want to change the culture here, but I'm not in a leadership position. Do I have to work my way up in order to have that influence? Or how can I do that from my current position? It's a pretty common question in
managing up.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, part of this comes back to you putting on display this thing that you value and prioritize in your life. If that is something that's going to be valued at this company that you're working for, it'll get noticed and likely promoted. But if it's not something that's not valued and it's not something that anyone wants to have as a priority or anything like that, you'll discover that. Mm-hmm. And you have to figure out, what do you want to do? Mm-hmm. Because you're probably going to be frustrated that, you know, taking personal responsibility, being a powerful person, you not being able to set boundaries and choosing love over fear. I mean, all these things, if you are living that and reflecting that really well, and it has no place to land, and you kind of like the parenting thing, if you're trying to shove it down someone's throat, it's not going to go well. But if you get seen as this thing that is influencing people, that is creating a safe space, that people are gathering around you. And if that does not go noticed by the leadership, then you've got a decision, I think, to figure out what you want to do. Mm-hmm. The hard part is that, you know, I don't know. I hear it from Ben all the time, but leadership flows from the top down. And so if your leader in this company doesn't have a value for that, you're stuck in the middle, I don't know how you're going to influence, except for where you are, which, can you be satisfied in that? Is your coworkers, leading your coworkers and creating that, like, could you rally that and be satisfied enough that maybe during lunchtime you have a book club or you do personality tests? Like, could you be satisfied with cultivating that around your peers, and know that you may never progress higher?
Mm-hmm. And I would recommend that you find out what's really important to the leaders. Like, could you convince the leaders around you that you not only understand what they're trying to accomplish, what's important to them, what they value, the clarity of the outcomes, the clarity of what they're protecting, as well as, you know, what their goals are? Could you do a great job in getting their attention that you've made these things really important to you? Mm-hmm. So that when they look at you, they think, oh my gosh, if this person was more powerful here, we would get more of what it is that we want here. Mm-hmm. And so you're essentially communicating to the higher ups that you take a bullet for their success. Because once a leader sees that in somebody in their environment, mm-hmm. they want to empower them person. They want that to be a leader. And in doing so, as you become more trusted and more dependable and productive, a lot of people don't have people like that in their environment. Like, wow.
Mm-hmm.
I will allow you to become more of an influencer here. Now, and this is what begins to happen, is the momentum. You begin to be drawn into what I would call the hot lava. Mm-hmm. You're being drawn towards a place of empowerment. And eventually, you'll be part of the decision-making about what it is that is important here.
Mm-hmm.
But it took a while because you were outside maybe even knowing what's important to this company or this church or this family.
Mm-hmm.
But as you are on display, adding to the success of what we're doing, leaders will draw you closer to them.
Mm-hmm.
Because leaders love to be successful. And if as many people as possible, helping them be successful is, I always like to say, you make me feel like a genius for
yes.
empowering you. Like, that's exactly right. That's what leaders are all about, is trying to feel smart for who they empowered so that what's important to them is accomplished.
Yeah.
So if you want to do a good job influence in an organization, make sure that you do a great job saying, I'd take a bullet for the success of this company.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I agree.
Mm-hmm.
And being brave enough to even probably approach the leadership and ask that question of, okay, can I do that? It's good. I love that.
The leaders in my church have a punishment paradigm. And I have watched it play out in situations in the past. Some I have even participated in. I've been in this church for a long time, but I am now learning about what it means to be unpunishable. Should I stay in this community? Do I talk with the leaders? Well, it's a little bit like that last question we mm-hmm. just answered, and in that, you've been there for a long time. I imagine that you have a relationship with the leaders. But before you can become an influencer, you're going to have to convince them that you're more interested in in their success as leaders than you are in controlling them and mm-hmm. their culture.
Yeah.
So that's the barrier that you're breaking down with listening, learning, serving. You got that work to do first before you just all of a sudden, you know, have a new idea of how we should do Thanksgiving in this house. You know, like if you're, you know, you marry into a family and you show up at Thanksgiving and say, you guys are doing it all wrong. Like, well, that's a great way to be the scariest person in the room.
Yeah.
And mom and grandma are both looking at you mm-hmm. like, okay, little girl, I'm not sure what planet you arrived from, but we've been doing Thanksgiving for a long time around here. We know exactly how this works. So it would be best for you to figure out how to even cook what's going on before you start talking about having mincemeat pie instead of pumpkin or whatever it is that you think is better.
You know, Ben and I went and this summer were camp mom and dad for the kids' youth camp. Ben and I have done a lot of youth camps because he was in youth ministry for years and years, and then we were leaders and we went to them. So we have a large experience of youth camps and different things. And so it was funny because while we're at youth camp, we are not the leaders. We are there to serve the leaders. Mm-hmm. And there are moments where I was like, you know, and I thought, I could tell you that you're doing it wrong or what I think you need to correct or adjust, but my job was to serve you. Mm-hmm. That's why I came here. And, you know, kind of even to go back to the last question a little bit, and that we just served, we would clarify and clarify, what is your heart? What is your vision? What do you need us to do? And that's what we did 110% while we were there. By the end of camp, they were empowering us more and more and more and more. And you know, we have a really great relationship with them. It's not like a huge conflict. It was just funny observation, like, oh, that's not how I would peel potatoes. Like, we're going with the Thanksgiving analogy. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's to the point where by the end of it, they're asking us for input and feedback for the next year to come and like wanting to make sure that we're always around because how much they felt because of what we took on. And that's the place that you want to be in is I'm not here to control. I'm not here to manipulate. I'm not here to change. I'm here to serve you. And if I do a really good job of taking care of your heart and things that are important to you, usually I'm invited into those spaces where I get to give feedback. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that's just what we did. Again, it's not quite the extreme situation, but it was still the same. I mean, we're very seasoned in our youth camp days, and we could have come in and, you know, these guys are not as seasoned, and that's okay. They're doing an excellent, fantastic job. We are so proud of them. But, like, that's just the process of stewarding the knowledge that you have, the growth that you've had, and the maturity is I don't have to cram down my opinions just because I'm walking in something that is wisdom. I'm gonna do a good job with me.
Yeah,
and see what happens.
And this is a word out to all the grandparents in the world. You know, because when your kids show up with their kids, they have a culture, and they have a culture because whoever you raised married somebody
that was not raised by you,
who had a culture, and so that person brought their culture with them and blended it to your culture and changed it mm-hmm. to their culture. And if you don't learn that, if you don't learn what their culture is and what they're trying to protect and what's so important to them mm-hmm. and what they're throwing all their energy into providing for their children, if you don't learn what that is and then demonstrate that you're going to help them support that and or accomplish it, then you will be a threat.
Yeah.
And you'll be resisted. And you'll take it as rejection and like they're doing something wrong instead of realizing that you did not show them that them empowering you in their family system was going to help them accomplish what they're trying to do in their family. And it's going to require for a while that you adjust because you're not them.
Yeah.
You're not them. And you don't have all the lessons. You don't have all the you don't have all the answers.
Yeah.
And even though you're old and even though you've done this before, doesn't mean you've not done that before. You did you before, you didn't do them before. So you have to really take notes and clarify and spend some time showing them that you get it. Mm-hmm. And then at some point, you'll be able to drop one of your precious pearls in front of them and say, what do you think? And they go, wow, that's amazing. That would help us so much. You go, well, that's why I started with that one, because I thought you'd like it.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's good. Well, these were great questions.
Yeah.
If you want to send us some more, please do that. We love questions. And we will keep chasing after whole healthy families. And thanks so much for joining us on The Kyla Show.
Yep.
Thanks for listening. Never miss an episode of The Kyla Show by subscribing to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or watch us on the Loving on Purpose YouTube channel. Don't forget to submit your questions and testimonies to thekylashow.com. The Kyla Show is produced by Ali Armading, co-produced by Ashley Beck and Anna Hill, and show promoter Christian Zamora. Don't forget, whole healthy families are going to save the world.